with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside to the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line on a Football Friday, going at you guys with a triple option here on a Football Friday. Femi Abebefe alongside Mike Palm, the VP of Operations here at the Circa Resort and Casino, and Mike Pritchard, our VSiN NFL analyst, played nearly a decade in the National Football League, former first-round pick, and also a national champion with the Colorado Buffs. The Buffs play tonight, by the way, hosting Stanford. We'll get into that game when we talk a little bit of college football in just a bit here. But fun show that we have on deck coming up in hour number two. Tank Williams, former NFL defensive back, now betting analyst, will join us as we discuss this week's NFL slate. But gentlemen, how are we doing here on this Football Friday morning?
Wonderful. We're in the midst of the playoff, Major League Baseball playoffs, hockey's underway, WNBA finals, and we got a full weekend of college football. It really started last night, so it is a great time to be a better.
Yeah, absolutely. From a betting standpoint, the fall or when we're in the spring?
Ooh, for me, it's the fall.
Okay, yeah. Okay. October, November.
Okay. Yeah. Because you got March Madness, you got all that stuff.
Yeah, it's tough.
I playoffs.
I used to be a bigger college basketball better than I am now. Uh-huh. You know, there's so many teams. Right. There's so many teams, 353 Division I teams to pay attention to. I like it right now. Mm-hmm. Start of the hockey season. Baseball playoffs are an animal unto itself. And then we're right in the middle of the football, the NFL, and college seasons.
100%. And yep. We have the hockey guide is out over at VSiN.com/scribe for those of you who did not get it. NBA guide is also out. JVT, our senior NBA analyst, did a terrific job on that. The association comes back in about 10 days or so. So that'll be a lot of exciting. It adds to the menu that we have here to bet on. But let's talk about what we saw last night. It wasn't the most delicious meal on the menu, but it was a prominent one. And that was the Kansas City Chiefs beating the Denver Broncos 19-8 in the AFC West showdown on Thursday Night Football. Chiefs just cover the 10.5-point spread. Harrison Butker knocking through a 52-yard field goal, which was really impressive in the wind conditions that we saw at Arrowhead Stadium last night. Game goes well under the total of 47.5. And the way that I saw this is that this was a game that came and went, and I'm glad I had no money on it.
Yeah. The bettors got the better part of the under. That total came down. We really didn't get sided too much here. Number moved around. So 11 wasn't an awful result. How about Butker's kick before the half? Yeah. That would have been good from 70.
Right.
That would have been good from 70. Yeah, that pretty amazing. I just continue to marvel at how poorly Russell Wilson is playing, and it's hard to believe. I mean, he's the decisions he's making, what he's seen, I don't know, but compare that to, you know, even his time from Wisconsin through winning the Super Bowl, almost winning two in Seattle and really being the hero of that city,
right,
to what we're watching right now. I mean, I know Mr. Lombardi has some opinions on the direction the Broncos should go. What do you say about your former team,
Prince? Well, I mean, it's falling apart. Like I said this a couple of weeks ago. I thought they hit rock bottom, but they keep crashing through the floor. Sean Payton didn't help himself by what he said at the beginning of the year. There's no confidence on that roster at all. When you have a bunch of players saying that they're a bunch of losers in the locker room, you have guys that have been a Bronco their entire career so far. They have not won, right? And so that's never good. You gotta turn this thing over. They've kind of slow rolled it in terms of trying to turn it over, thinking that, okay, we're a quarterback away. Let's put Russell Wilson in there. When in reality, they were entire roster away back a few years ago. So, this team, this franchise, once a proud franchise, Joe Ellis, who was running the trust because of Mr. Bolin, he didn't know what he was doing. He wasn't an owner. John Elway was one foot out the door. I did a lot for this organization. I'm going to go play golf in Coeur d'Alene.
Beautiful place.
Oh, it's awesome up there, right? And then you just had complacency all throughout the entire building. And so now they're trying to fix it. They're trying to piecemeal it, right? But it looks awful. You're right. Russell Wilson is nowhere close to the quarterback he once was. And I don't know how you get him or program him or get him to play the way you need to. And then on top of that, Sean Payton has not been calling great games either, though. I mean, it is atrocious out there. And then defensively, not very good, right? They got good players, a couple good players, but not solid. So that was a dangerous game for me because it was just that short week, lack of preparation, divisional game, familiarity, tendencies are in play now. I stayed away from it as well as Femi. So I watched it as much as I could, but mostly took a lot of notes in terms of what to look for as we move through the season right now.
I forgot who tweeted this. I wish I knew because I would give them credit. But I saw a tweet last night and it said the Broncos should have either lost this game by 28 or by 8 points. Like it felt like one of those weird type of games where it's like you could make a case that, hey, they actually probably should have covered by the way Kansas City was messing up the red zone stuff. Or you can make the other side of that. Well, Denver probably should have been blown out in this game because they couldn't get going on offense. And you mentioned it, Mike, here, the way that Russell Wilson played last night, 13 of 22, 95 yards, one touchdown. It was a great catch by Cortland Sutton. But the two interceptions, one of them was horrific. The one that Nick Bolton just didn't see him at all, threw it right to him. The other one was off a deflection. So we've known that Wilson has been bad dating back to last season, and the numbers bear it out, 6-14-1 against the spread as the Broncos quarterback. But really what stood out to me, and I don't know if maybe this is just the feeling out process because it's year one for Sean Payton, but Pritch mentioned it, like, Sean Payton, it doesn't feel like he's got this thing under control. It doesn't feel like we're going in the right direction. And like just the timeout at the end of the first half, it's like, what are you doing with that? Like that doesn't feel like the Sean Payton that we saw in New Orleans.
Yeah, it's lost. I thought the storyline going into the fourth quarter was would they get shut out? Because Payton's never been shut out. I think 238th head coaching game. He's never been shut out. I thought they were going to get shut out. I really did. I didn't know how they were going to string three or four first downs together. They did. They completed. They got the help of that roughing the passer penalty. Generous. They would have been. I'm sure they're going for it on fourth down. Right. They're down 16. They would have had a went fourth and 10. But that got them to the first down at the 12 and they scored. Somebody said to me last night, and they said, this goes to show you what a good coach Pete Carroll is, the way Russell Wilson performed in Seattle compared to now. But I don't know if I can draw that logical conclusion.
You know, you want to give a lot of credit to Pete Carroll, but Pete Carroll had to protect Russell because that roster was full of men. And I'm talking about guys that would call you out, right? And Russell, it was too delicate for that. And Pete had to protect that. I think Russell aligned himself with Paul Allen, too, the owner at the time. And, you know, that rubbed people the wrong way in the locker room. So he tried to do that in Denver. He tried to do the exact same things in Denver. And you can't keep protecting this guy and his ego. And, you know, Sean Payton's got a big problem that way. I'll give you another indicator why Sean Payton and his coaching staff stinks right now. It's because you have McLaughlin and Javonte Williams. Balling, right? They were running the ball, running tough, playing a lot of plays. I was just looking at the snap count. Samaje Perine comes in and fumbles, right? In a critical situation. He was cold. Why is he in the game? That's on the running backs coach, and certainly that's on the staff or whoever put him in that situation. He's cold. And I'm not making excuses. You're supposed to hold on to the rock. But you already had guys getting plenty of run in the game. Already warmed up, and now you're in a critical moment of the game, and you put in this guy, and he fumbles, right? And it wasn't anything that would have caused a fumble to hit. It was just hit off his thigh. It just wasn't protecting him because he was cold. He wasn't into the game. And so that was a coaching error that was catastrophic. And it's just stuff like that the Broncos are doing that makes them a laughingstock right now.
I want to switch over to the Kansas City side because we'll have a lot of time to kind of do the Denver eulogy because that's where this is headed, sitting at 1-5 through 6 weeks of the season. For the Chiefs, though, they improved to 5-1, but they're getting it done in a way that they haven't gotten it done in this Mahomes era. It's with defense. Mm-hmm. Like Chris Jones has been awesome. He's had a sack every single game this season that he's played coming back from the holdout. Like Nick Bolton's now back there. The secondary, those young pieces are starting to play really well there with Trent McDuffie and the whole crew. And offensively, though, the Chiefs look kind of pedestrian, and this is a Denver defense that had been giving up yards after yards and points after points. Did it concern you that Kansas City didn't look crisp against Denver, or is it kind of just chalk it up to the conditions?
It looked like they looked on that Sunday night game against the Jets. It's taking Mahomes so long to read. He's not getting the looks and making the quick throws and putting the balls in spots. And, you know, and then, you know, when he starts backpedaling and he turns his shoulder, you know, and he gets his shoulders parallel to the line of scrimmage, bad things are going to happen for that team. So I am concerned about their offense. I'm concerned about their offense when they go up against the top defense, which they haven't yet.
Yeah.
They don't look explosive at all. And they just continue to win these games. You know, you have to give them credit for that. But when push comes to shove, I'm not sure they're at the level they were the last 3 or 4 years.
You know, it's interesting. I kind of saw this coming. I mean, they took away Tyreek Hill, right? Yep. And so the explosive nature of the offense is gone. But they want to matriculate. They want to. They want to get to more possession type plays. And I won them a Super Bowl last year. So what we're looking for as bettors and what we're looking for as fans, this explosive offense and these dynamic plays, Andy Reid has turned back the clock. He's in mid-90s form right now with this offense. The Green Bay Packers. He's on that tree with Mike Holmgren.
Yeah.
So watching that game, because I ran this offense, it reminded me of the freedom that we have. Like Kelce in the middle of the field. Like if you were like E personnel, I would take the place of the tight end. Basically, that's what Kelce is. He's an E personnel guy. When he's maneuvering in the middle of the field, he's just finding a spot. You got so much freedom. It's supposed to be a basic cross, but it's not a basic cross. Like just find an open spot. So they're improvising on the fly. And it's working. We're looking for something else, but to them, it's working. And at the same time, they're revving up the running game. So they're in stealth mode. I agree with you. I think we should be looking for more, especially when they get some teams that can match up with them. That's going to be tough if they don't have any great matchups on the outside. But what they're doing right now, they're in stealth mode offensively. And that record's allowing them. And the competition that they played so far is allowing them to remain in stealth mode.
And then the improv is what I'm curious to see if that is sustainable once they play better competition. Next week, they'll be hosting the Chargers. The Chargers, say what you want about them, they've always given the Chiefs a little bit of trouble. Those games always feel like they come down to a field goal. And then a few weeks from now, week 9, they play the Miami Dolphins over in Germany. That, I think, will be an interesting game to see how they can keep up with that Dolphins offense. All right, we'll get to some of the other NFL news and notes. We're just getting warmed up here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page, sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up today for only $19 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line on a Football Friday. Femi Abebefe, Mike Palm, Mike Pritchard here hanging out with you guys at Circa Resort and Casino. We saw the news come out yesterday from CBS's Josina Anderson. Confirmed, though, today, Cleveland Browns have ruled out Deshaun Watson for their week 6 contest with the San Francisco 49ers. The line has shot all the way up to 10. Where we're sitting here at Circa, still 9.5, but 10 is the consensus number. The total has gone from 41.5 to now 36. PJ Walker will be behind center in what will be a messy game weather-wise out there in Northeast Ohio. But when you begin to kind of break this game down and Deshaun Watson's absence now is a second consecutive game with the bye week in between here, this is, appears to be rough sledding for the old Cleveland Browns in this one.
This should have been a good spot for Cleveland. Coming off a bye, Frisco off of Sunday night and then having to travel east. I thought this was a good betting opportunity yesterday or Wednesday when this game was still at 7.5. You knew he wasn't playing.
Right.
Coming off a bye, he would have practiced on Wednesday if he was playing. That didn't make any sense. So, I mean, I think you had to be 95% sure it was going to be PJ Walker. And then at that point was at 7.5 where you could have still teased it, right? Teased it down before it gets to 10. It'll be on everybody's teasers that betted early. We'll see. Can there be a flat spot for San Francisco? There really hasn't been for them, right? They've been clearly the best team in football. Mm-hmm. They did play a great game on Sunday night, but they haven't played a bad game yet, really. So I just think be interested to see how the Cleveland defense holds up against the offense. That's going to be the matchup we're all looking for. Because with PJ Walker, the Browns, you know, the Browns want to win this game. They're going to have to keep it in the teens, I would think.
You're exactly right. 1,000% correct. I mean, this is where you want to really find out how good this Cleveland Browns defense is. I mean, the San Francisco 49ers, they're not cute. They're going to line up. They're going to try to beat you up. And that plays right into the strength of what Cleveland wants to do, right? And certainly the willingness to mix it up and the willingness to be physical. Not a lot of teams have that willingness. A lot of teams talk it, but they don't walk it. And this is a game in which, you know, with weather, Purdy, he's a high percentage passer anyway. So I don't know if weather is going to affect their game plan and what San Francisco wants to do. Now, is it PJ Walker?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I keep wanting to say PJ Tucker, right? the basketball player. But it's PJ Walker.
Maybe the line would still be 10 if that
was. You know, I thought DTR was a playmaker, but man, he was lost.
Yeah.
You remember? I couldn't understand that one. That game plan was too sophisticated, or I don't know. But PJ Walker, we saw what he was capable of doing at times, right?
Yeah, he can improvise. Stepped in one game.
Sure, sure. But can Stefanski stay true to what the identity of this team is, and as still being physical and as still running the ball? And I don't care if it's San Francisco. You know, San Francisco is a bully right now. And how you take on a bully is you punch him back. And if Cleveland doesn't try to do that, then I don't care what the spread is. I mean, San Francisco is that good.
Yeah. This, like you mentioned, this was one of those spots that I think everybody had circled after seeing the way the Sunday night played out. Yeah. It's like, oh, the Niners coming off of the high. Everyone's crowning them mm-hmm. as the best team in the league. And they are mm-hmm. based on 5 weeks of the season. But it's going in, playing that early game in a messy environment in Cleveland. But I don't know if you can really back it with PJ Walker at quarterback. But I will present this to you guys, though, because the X's and O's matchup, I think, is really interesting when the Niners have the ball and the Cleveland is defending, because Jim Schwartz has had a lot of success against Kyle Shanahan. Like, I believe Kyle Shanahan is 1-8 in games played against Jim Schwartz's defense. How much do you factor that into the equation of, hey, maybe Myles Garrett and Za'Darius Smith and those guys can sort of rattle Brock Purdy? We haven't seen anybody be able to do it. Maybe they can rattle Purdy, or at least slow down this Niners offense that has been prolific, scoring 30-plus in every single game so far this season.
I think they do a good job, like Miami, of getting the ball out quick.
Right.
When there's pressure, Purdy gets the ball out. He's not going to take sacks unless the pocket just collapses and he can't move, right? He's going to get the ball out, and he's got the receivers that, you know, they can get separation quick. That's a great stat. 1-8
again. 1-8.
Wow.
That's a great stat.
That is a really great stat. We saw this Cleveland defense struggle when the offense couldn't keep the ball mm-hmm. against Baltimore, right? And they were on the field, and Baltimore started running the ball on them, and they were on the field too much. Even a great defense, your offense has to complement them. So with Walker out here, they're going to have drives. They're going to have to get 2, 3, 4 and get them some rest, or mm-hmm. they're going to wear down like they did against Baltimore. Really pretty much had their way with this defense, the only team that has to this point. But it could get ugly to my life if they can't control clock and at least get, you know, 27, 28 minutes of possession.
Right. I mean, San Francisco is so good right now. I mean, Christian McCaffrey could be MVP. He's on that kind of pace.
People are talking about him.
He's been phenomenal.
How about when you got Debo Samuel and he might be your fourth best offensive?
Exactly.
I mean, it's crazy. It's an embarrassment of riches.
It is. And you know who else is on top of their game better than I've ever seen it? Is Kyle Shanahan. Mm-hmm. And I know I got a feeling Mike is involved in this, his dad, but he is so comfortable calling the play. Like you see guys on the sideline with their playbooks and play cards are like, you know.
We saw Sean Payton's in 4K last night.
Yeah, like this wide, right? And you got Kyle, his play sheet is like this. He's just like calling a play, looking at it, all casual, all calm, because the game is coming to him. Like what you said about Schwartz, he knows that, and he's going to use that to fuel him to put together a solid game plan. Here's the key. Offensively for Cleveland, they have to be who they are, and that's a physical team, possess the football, limit possessions for San Francisco. If they're turning it over, if they're three and outs, if they're sputtering, San Francisco is going to destroy this team.
I don't think Dallas tried to run the ball enough in the first half against the team, you know? You've got to. If you can't run the ball, you're not going to win with Dak.
Nope.
You have to be able to run the ball. I thought McCarthy gave up on the run game a little too quick. You know, they were still in the game. They got the touchdown, you know, and it just got away from them. So I still think that San Francisco and Philadelphia are better than what the best of the AFC has to offer. Both of them are. And we talked about what an AFC was going to be this year with all the quarterbacks and what. But it's turned out that, you know, the elite teams in the NFC have just been more complete and better defensively.
Yeah, it just feels like the NFC teams, especially the Niners. I mean, a lot of continuity. I know they lose D'Amico Ryans, but Steve Wilks has stepped in and done a terrific job with that defense. Mm-hmm. And they picked up right where they left off. Just look menacing on both sides of the ball. And right now, the clear-cut best team in the league, in my opinion, and the betting market suggests that as well, plus 350 over at DraftKings, are the 49ers to win the Super Bowls. Would you guys lay the 10? I mean, it's a big number, low total. Weather could be an issue. Would you lay the 10?
I wouldn't take it. Put it that way.
No.
I think there's better spots than to lay 10 on the road in an early game for a West Coast team.
Mike was spot on. Early on when it was 7.
Yeah,
I mean,
7.5. Yeah, tease it.
I mean, that was the play. Anticipating, and that's another pro tip, really. I mean, anticipating injuries, really. Like, it's a labrum situation or a rotator
cuff. Yep.
So Deshaun, with his guaranteed money, shut it down. I mean, if this was the playoffs, really, if this was the playoffs, would Deshaun Watson play, you think?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I feel like he would.
Right. Absolutely. So here you go.
He saw that Niner tape.
Yeah. Guaranteed money. I'm okay. I'll get the bye week too. Yeah, I'm taking this week off.
He watched that Niner tape there in the bye week and said, oh, dear God, I'll see you in a couple of weeks. We got a couple of minutes left. Let's get to Sunday night football. Unfortunately, this is our Sunday night matchup, but we got to work with what we got. And it's the Giants at the Bills. Wow. And the point spread right now, Buffalo 15-point favorites, total 44.5. The Giants earlier this morning ruled out Daniel Jones. He's dealing with a neck injury, left the game last week in their loss to the Miami Dolphins. So it will be Tyrod Taylor in a revenge spot going up against the Buffalo Bills. Can the Giants hang with the number with all the injuries they have against a Buffalo team looking to bounce back?
Unlikely. Mm-hmm. They're really bad.
Yeah.
They're really bad. I didn't realize how bad the Giants and Patriots were. Mm-hmm. That Monday night game against Seattle really shone a light for me on this team. I'm going to ask you both a question. What difference should the line make having Taylor instead of Jones, or should there be any?
I don't think so. Right.
So, I would say there should be, because I don't think that Tyrod can get through a game. Like, he seems like a shot fighter to me. He got banged up in the game against Miami, and he played like what, 3 series? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not trying to make light of it, but like, I think that's just the reality. He's at a point in his career to where I'm not even sure if he can protect himself, and he's behind that offensive line. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I think Tommy DeVito might be called up to the active roster, but it wouldn't be shocked if we see another quarterback in for the Giants finishing this game.
Well, one caveat I would say about Buffalo is they're banged up. You know, offensively, can they just run the ball and get out of there and beat down the Giants? They could, but will they? Right? I don't know if they're disciplined. I don't know if they're made up that way. And then, you know, with the Giants, they're so horrible and they're so soft that I don't know on the road again. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know who's going to show up, what's going to show up, really, to be honest with you. The only thing about laying a big number is Buffalo not themselves. I'm worried about that. I'm worried that Buffalo...
Well, they looked themselves against Miami, right?
They did.
But you see, I think they made a big mistake getting to London on Friday. Mm-hmm. They looked like they were sleepwalking in the first half of that game. And the game really didn't pick up till the fourth quarter.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think they made a strategic error there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. So the Giants will also be without left tackle Andrew Thomas and their center, John Michael Schmitz. We'll get to some NFL futures big picture when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Basketball season is ready to tip off, and the VSiN experts have been hard at work tracking the latest player moves to help you bet smarter. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get our all-new NBA betting guide featuring up-to-date previews on all 30 teams, futures, and year-long player props, best bets on player awards like Rookie of the Year, live betting strategies, plus strategy and advice on building your own NBA betting model from senior NBA analyst Jonathan Von Tobel. Give yourself an edge this season and get the VSiN NBA betting guide by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys at the Circa Resort and Casino. It's Mike Pritchard on the far end, Mike Palm in the middle, Femi Abebefe here on the left side of your screen. We're having a little bit of fun here on a Football Friday, breaking things down. But let's go ahead and set the Week 6 games off to the side here, and let's talk a little big picture. Some of the NBA futures, NFL futures here, as we're now 5 weeks and 1 game into the season. And I want to start off with the Super Bowl winner market right now. And this is the line movement from prior to the start of the season to right now where we sit here in Week 6. The 49ers were plus 550. They have now since moved to plus 350, the current favorites. Buffalo was plus 750. Now they're plus 950. Dallas was 10-1, now 15-1. And the Detroit Lions were 18-1, now 15-1 here. Any thoughts on 5 weeks in who would be a good bet to make at the current prices in the Super Bowl futures market?
You know, I still think Cleveland, if Watson gets healthy and he can play the way he did against Tennessee is live as a longer shot.
Okay.
And I think they're around 30 to 1 right now.
28 at DraftKings. Okay.
It's too short. 350 is too short. We just bet San Francisco in individual games along. I think, you know, at the start of the season, bet 6 to 1 on a team is ridiculous, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So, honestly, that's where I'd look. I think it's too tough in the NFC to have to go to San Francisco and Philadelphia or vice versa the order in consecutive weeks. So I would have to look for value in a Super Bowl future at the AFC side.
Yeah, I mean.
And the Browns might not make the playoffs.
They might not make it. Right. you know, I can't pass up the Lions at this point. Because the NFL is a copycat league. We know that. The Rams and what they were able to put together. Won the Super Bowl. Tampa, what they were able to put together, won the Super Bowl. You think about what San Francisco is doing right now. The Lions are San Francisco Midwest. Like, it's no different than Cincinnati going to a Super Bowl to play the Rams. Cincinnati was LA Rams East, right? Identical offenses, identical philosophies, all that stuff. And so what the Lions are doing with this offense, it's identical to what San Francisco does. Now, they don't have the same players, right? But they are talented, though. Very, very talented offensively.
I want to make this counter argument. Okay. Richard, you might say that my theory is all off, but what in that Lion pedigree in that program, whether it's a player or the organization or the coaching staff, tells you that they're a champion?
From a pedigree standpoint, they're not, right?
I mean,
but think about Kyle Shanahan and what's driving him. Like, he's barely got a above 500 record. I mean, he guy as a head coach could have won a Super Bowl, should have won a Super Bowl. They put together a solid roster and with names, premium names at the top, and then a collection of guys that they're getting a lot out of, similar to the Lions. Like, they have premium names on the defense at the top. If you want to throw Aiden Hutchinson in there, I think he's not Bosa, no, but he's a guy that can turn into something like that. And then, you know, their linebacking core is solid, not household names, but solid. But offensively, they are explosive, and they can be more explosive if they want to. But they're running the same system as San Francisco's running.
I feel like the NFL is a bit like the NBA in that it's a step ladder approach to a championship. You have mm-hmm. to achieve certain levels, right? It mm-hmm. takes a while to knock through that door. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's Tampa Bay, but Brady,
right.
I mean, was the great elixir there that solved that. I just feel like you have to have gotten to some point in the playoffs before mm-hmm. you're going to go win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You have to, I just think it's too new to them. And I think, you know, they're not a year away from being a year away, but they might be a year away. They might be a couple road playoff games away from being able to go and do that in the future.
But, yeah. I mean, it's a fair point. It really is. But I think what was different about the Lions is the makeup of this coaching staff, which is fascinating to me sure. when you have a bunch of former players and all this emotion, but yet they're getting it. They're getting the most out of these guys. They really, I mean, if you think about how they're built offensive line, who's better offensive line wise? I mean, it's comparable.
Cleveland.
With the Lions and San Francisco. Without Conklin, I mean, I think that took a big hit. But for Cleveland, yeah. But offensively, the Lions, they're deep at running back. They're deep at wide receiver. Goff is playing better than he ever has. It's like you can put Goff on the 49ers and they're still a Super Bowl caliber team.
I think they've done everything right, Pritch.
Yeah.
And the draft picks have been terrific and they've got the right system for Goff.
Pedigree.
And the whole thing is they kept this offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. Everything they've done right. I just think it's so hard to make that huge leap from not playoffs to being a Super Bowl champion. Right.
I mean, yeah. And Femi, feel free. Mike and I have the floor right now.
I'm enjoying the discussion. I'm enjoying the discussion, watching the offense play.
He's got a bias towards Colorado. So now former players, high energy and excitement. That's the model. He's projecting that Colorado model now.
No, but what you're saying, though, is true for the Rams. Like, was Matthew Stafford the missing piece of the Rams?
Well, I think in the Rams' case,
they had gotten there.
Yeah, make sure
McVay had been there and been through it, and you know.
I think to your point with the Buccaneers as well, because like we all point to Brady being the catalyst. Yeah. Bruce Arians had coached in an NFC title game before, so like it wasn't like they had at least been in the playoffs and kind of been through those wars.
Yeah.
For Detroit, Goff has been to a Super Bowl, so at least he has that.
Yeah.
But Dan Campbell, he's never coached a playoff game before in his career, which I don't know if we're sitting there in January and it says, all right, you have this ticket, and the Lions have to beat the Eagles in the NFC divisional round. I don't know if I'd want to.
Was that game last year? Well, I'm trying to remember that game last year.
I think Philly won 38-35 week one, I believe it was.
It was a week one game.
High scoring game. Hell of a game.
Yeah.
But I do think the postseason there is something to pedigree. But to your point, Pritch, the schedule sets up pretty well for the Detroit Lions as well. Like, let's just say they win on Sunday. They're a favorite, 3-point favorite, although the market's betting against them. 3.5 now down to 3. If they win on Sunday, they're now 5-1. At Baltimore next week, so probably an underdog. Yeah. Let's say they lose that one. So you're sitting at 5-2. The next games are home against the Raiders. That's probably a win. Mm-hmm. You have the bye week, and then you're at the Los Angeles Chargers coming off of the bye, which where you probably want to pick them around that number. Home against the Bears, home against the Packers, at the Saints, at the Bears, home Broncos, at the Vikings. So who knows who the hell's playing quarterback for Minnesota at that point. At the Cowboys, home Vikings. Like, that to me, it feels like 13 wins is kind of the floor when you look at that
they'll
schedule.
They'll be favored in, what, 7 of the last 8, other than at Dallas.
Yep.
They'll be favored in, so, you know, they got a chance to close on a heck of a run here.
Yeah,
so.
No, you know, rah-rah works, by the way. Well, emotion works, by
Campbell's
the way.
Campbell's the ATS guy.
He is. rah-rah works, by the way. I mean, it gives you an edge. It certainly does. I mean, especially when teams are so even, which when you look at talent, I mean, like I just compared the talent for Detroit with San Francisco. It's like, what's going to separate? What's going to distinguish? What's going to give you an edge? And a lot of times it is that belief, that confidence in that rah-rah.
What was the difference between the two Orange Bowls against Notre Dame? They dominated you the year before.
Oh, they didn't dominate us.
Oh, they
didn't dominate us.
They
scored
6 points.
In the second half, they got us.
6 points.
In the second half, they got us.
But what's the difference? You went from losing
to
winning.
Well,
it wasn't rah-rah.
It was rah-rah.
Well, Holtz was as good a motivator as anybody.
He was. But here, to your point, this is where your point is strong. The pedigree. That's what the difference was. Because the first time around, that 40-minute halftime, we weren't prepared for that, you know? And so we came out the second half and we were sluggish and Notre Dame wasn't. That they executed, we didn't. The next time around, the pedigree, we were ready for that 40-minute. We watched the Sugar Bowl. Yeah. We had our shoulder pads drinking Gatorade, getting ready for the second half against Notre Dame. So it was completely different, but the pedigree, you're right. That's the strong point that you made. That's the strongest point you made, by the way.
Well, I make many strong points.
So I think it's an interesting discussion with the Lions. I mean, as of right now, like the Niners, of course, the Niners, oh, by the way, are getting bet against as we speak here. The 10s are now gone. It's now down to 9.5. So people coming interested in PJ Walker and the Cleveland Browns, and to which I say, God bless you. And good luck with that. I mean, I'm not saying that they can't cover, because the weather is going to be horrendous. Weird stuff happens in weather games. But even if it's a bad weather game, it feels like it's like 16-3 49ers win or something like that. But we'll see.
Do you think Stefanski will have a quick hook to go back to DTR?
No.
You think that experiment is done for a while?
I think he's lost confidence.
Yeah. His head was spinning when he played the Baltimore
Ravens. Yeah, he lost confidence in that guy quickly.
Yeah, which is, I have faith in DTR in the future and when he develops a little bit and all that stuff, but I think his head was a little bit too much too soon for DTR. Vegas guy as well, so.
Mom spaghetti.
Palms were a little bit sweaty. Palms were a little bit sweaty there. Shout out to Detroit Lions. Shout out to 8 Mile as well on the Lombardi line. We're getting all the references in here. But on the other side, we will get to the marquee games in college football. Talking about Colorado Buffalo. They don't have a marquee game, but they do play tonight against the Stanford Cardinal. We'll talk about it. And then, of course, we'll talk about what's going on in Seattle. Game day is in the Pacific Northwest, Oregon and Washington, in the Pac-12 showdown that you will not want to miss. Come on back with us. It's the Lombardi line.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use promo code VEGAS when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. Femi Abebefe, Mike Palm, Mike Pritchard, and maybe we will find out who the Pac-12 crown belongs to later on this weekend, because coming up tomorrow, it's a showdown on Montlake between rivals. College game day in Seattle. Cannot wait to see the greatest setting on a national stage as the Oregon Ducks play the Washington
Huskies. Are you going?
I'm not going, no. I'm
Mitch Moss is going. Is Amal Shaw has an invitation, and he's on the fence.
Oh, he's not going. He's not going.
If he's not going to Washington, he's never going to a college. he went to Ohio State, Michigan, because Derek dragged him there, and he thought he couldn't say no, I guess. He slept during the game.
From what I know about Amal,
wow, really?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Fell asleep.
Okay. From what I know about Amal is that he likes to watch all the games. He doesn't really like to just be in one setting.
Yeah.
Not a big in attendance kind of a guy. So
you would go, right? If you had a ticket to the
somebody
game?
Somebody paid for my flight and paid for my ticket.
I just said had a ticket to the game. I didn't know about putting you up, lodging.
Oh, man.
I need a stipend.
Just stay up all night and enjoy it that way.
You got to convince Bill Andy. We need someone on the scene there.
Right. There you go.
Let Boots Robin's on the ground in Seattle. Nobody better than somebody from the Pacific Northwest. But I can't wait for the game, though. Oregon, Washington, 3:30 Eastern kickoff, 12:30 Pacific. Right now, the Huskies, 3-point favorites, total 67. We talked with Barrett Salee last week, who said the Heisman Trophy could be on the line in this game. The loser could be eliminated, but we'll put all that stuff to the side. How do you guys see this game shaking out tomorrow on Montlake?
I think the total's too high.
Mm.
Both of these offenses are very efficient, but they're not fast-paced teams per se, right? They don't try to rush to the line.
Yeah.
Oregon wants to run the ball.
Right.
Make no mistake about it. Oregon wants to run the ball more than Washington wants to run the ball. I think it'd be a great game.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if either team wins. It's probably just a one-score game. I just think that's a little high. It's really almost a championship game atmosphere. At Husky Stadium on Saturday. So I lean under. Okay. It's too hard for me to get a side in this one.
Yeah, I don't look at totals, but I agree with you on that. I mean, it's a rivalry game. When are these teams going to settle in after the whole hype? And we know Oregon can rev it up from their head coach, and certainly looking for Washington to do the same. It's a border war. It's a game that is underlined, circled, highlighted in neon. I mean, you point and you identify this game now. Washington had extra time to prepare for this game, which is significant, I think, because we're talking about execution from a spread standpoint. And so that stadium, I played in that stadium when Washington had it going, and so did we. Femi, you were 1 year old when they won a national championship back in 1991.
The dog father, Don James.
Yeah, Mark Brunell, Greg Lewis, all those guys, right? Mario Bailey, all these guys. But when the fans are in that thing, that's a difficult place to play. And I know we talk about Oregon and how difficult it is to play there, but this border war and, Bo Nix, I know he's a Heisman Trophy candidate, but is he going to outplay and outshine Penix? I mean, Penix has been solid. This offense has been explosive. I think the weapons for Washington and indicate that as well. And I think that's going to be tough for Oregon. Oregon's got a great defense. I get it. But Washington, I'm an offensive guy in a rivalry situation. I think Washington has enough plays to get it done in this game.
Both teams, you mentioned efficient offensively, I think is a really good way to put it. But I would say Washington's probably more explosive in the passing game, because you mentioned Michael Penix, who right now is the Heisman favorite. Roma Dunze, he's got McMillan. He's got a bunch of great weapons to go ahead and distribute the ball to. But my concern here with the Huskies, and it's kind of taken me a little bit to come around to this style of play for Washington, because when I grew up, you talk about Don James and the Dog Father, and even the teams that were after with Chris Peterson and all that. It's always been running the football and playing great defense. This Husky defense, I think, is a little bit suspect. I think if you have a strong passing game, if you have a balanced attack, you can exploit this Washington defense. Can they outscore you? 100%. What Penix can do with the offense is terrific. But defensively is where I've kind of been a little bit apprehensive to dive all the way into believing that the Huskies are a college football playoff caliber team, because all their metrics say that they are, but I still haven't seen them be able to put up a good defensive performance against a good team. And we're going to find out tomorrow.
You see, Oregon 1-3-1 to the unders, right? And that game against Colorado way under.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. I just think that the pace of this game it's going to take, you know, you can get two punts each side. Your favorite here now on 66 and a half.
Yeah, it's not what college football used to be, obviously, with the clock running out and stuff, too. Then, you know, when teams want to do pace, they want to implement that. We see it in the first quarter, but we often don't see that consistently throughout a 60-minute game. They'll rev it up. They'll pick it up at points, at points, right? Maybe in the fourth quarter. Hey, let's rev up the pace. But it's not a sustained situation and where you want to get to the line of scrimmage and call these quick plays and get the ball snapped quickly in that way and trying to wear down your opponent. I mean, I think defensively, you have to coach towards that if you can, trying to keep those guys fresh, right? I think the offensive firepower, though, for Washington is there to keep them in this game, to your point, Femi, about their defense. And then in the fourth quarter, who's going to make those plays? Because that's when things get tight. And then certainly in a rivalry situation, home field advantage, I believe, is there in this matchup for the Huskies. I like the Huskies and the 3 points.
How big is the home field advantage there?
You know, when they're good, Mike, I think it's pretty good. I think it's pretty good. Like I said, when we played them, we had the home and home. The first year, Brunel wasn't there, but we played him up there, and that was tough. It took us a while to get going. But once we got going, obviously, we couldn't control the game that way. But I think when they got it going, though, that stadium is a tough place to win.
Don and James played everybody.
Team. Right.
I mean, they did home and home with you, home and home with Miami, home and home with Nebraska. Yeah. Remember, they ended both those teams' long home winning streaks in non-conference games, Miami and Nebraska. I don't think it's a top like four Pac-10 home venue, though. I think Rice-Eccles, I think Outzen is a tougher place to play. I don't know. I don't think it. I think if this game was at Oregon should be more than three. That's the difference between Outzen and Husky Stadium.
I would say it's a top three when it's humming along. Like Pritch said, like having covered games there and like just like following the program my whole life, like the way that the stadium is built, even though it's an outdoor stadium, like that's the noise is really trapped and it feels like it's on top of you when you're on the field level there, to where I think it's going to be humming. If the Huskies start fast, it's definitely going to be humming. Yeah. But if Oregon has a methodical drive and really takes it to them early in the game, it can quiet the crowd. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. So I'm very torn on this game. I think the two things that I'm really hung up on is Road Bo Nix. We saw that in the SEC. Road Bo Nix is not a good situation, but then it's the Husky defense as well. So we'll see what happens. I mean, it's going to come down to the turnovers. I would probably lean towards Washington winning the game. Whoever wins it will probably be the Heisman favorite, to be honest, based on what might happen in South Bend. But I think this is going to be a hell of a game to watch coming up tomorrow. Let's talk about the game in South Bend. USC, Notre Dame. The Fighting Irish have been bet up to 3-point favorites here at Circa. 2.5 is still the consensus number. 60.5 is our total. Does Notre Dame bounce back again here after the loss to Louisville?
I don't know. I have no thoughts really
here. You have no thoughts.
He had thoughts about the 89 team, but now he doesn't have thoughts.
That's relevant. It's relevant to your own theories and your experience.
2023 team, no thoughts. Yeah. Well, what about 2023 USC, though? I mean, you got to have thoughts on the Trojans this year, undefeated so
know.
Far. But.
I don't know. I mean, Grinch's defense could, you know, we could finally see Hartman really break out here. I mean, if they want to try to press it. They haven't, though. They've tried to stay balanced because they have a good offensive line. I mean, they have a very good turn the ball over 5 times in Louisville, you know, and in a close game, you just can't do that. I give an advantage to Notre Dame, but, you know, I don't even know where I'm at in my head with what I want to happen.
I mean, is college football more, does it lean more towards the offense or does it lean more towards the defense? I mean, I think in the National Football League, you can spot and identify great defensive teams and maybe you have some advantages betting. College football, to me, is all about the explosive nature and being offensive-minded. And Lincoln Riley is all that. You know, this is the kind of stage in which Caleb usually plays well in that offense. So it's a chance to catch points, even with a bad defense. I think USC and their defense isn't that good. Notre Dame at home, I mean, with offense, you know, if they can be well coached, if they're all on the same page and not making mistakes, I can see them winning the game. I can. But with that explosive nature of USC and Caleb and taking points, I mean, and catching points, that's attractive to me.
My argument against USC in this spot, I guess, if I had to make one, is just to step up in class here. I mean, this is Notre Dame that's been running in stakes races against USC. Who have they beaten? I mean, well, I guess Arizona is the best team they've beaten. I don't want to disrespect. Wow.
The disrespect for the Buffs.
I know, a little bit.
Disrespect the PR campaign in Boulder.
He's been subtle to this point. You've been subtle today to this point.
Notre Dame's right? Cup, this is our fourth straight ranked opponent. They had a go-to Duke, an undefeated go-to. An undefeated Louisville, right?
Toughest conference in college football.
Pac-12.
Top to bottom is Pac-12.
Oh, yeah, USC from the
Pac-12. But USC hasn't played in. I mean, that's like I said, SEC. Well, what does Vanderbilt have to do with the SEC? I mean, making it the best conference, right? They beat the bottom team.
You guys can't run the gauntlet? What's going on with Notre Dame?
Bad schedule.
We'll continue this.
Malloy would have never made this schedule.
Hour number two is coming up next on the Lombardi Line.